What's up, lads? It's the Esports Central Podcast, episode number 67. I'm back, and I'm joined by Mr. Prophecy. We were just reunited with the full crew last week, and now two of our hosts dead again, Prof.
Yeah, it seems like we're going to have to like perform some kind of ritual to get them back from the dead, because they do seem to die quite a bit. Although they respawn just as much, so maybe they are actual game characters.
Yeah, they're staying in character through and through, you know, like, I'm going to be a part of this esport, I'm going to die, then come back, and then I'm a level 25 character. If you, for the Dota nerds out there, they just never respawn, it's like endless, you know, like what happened to Extremes and Holden.
Yeah, I mean, they did apparently go to the secret shop to go buy that bottle of milk and then never came back.
Oh, that young pack of secrets. We turned 18, we grew up, we've moved out, and we're still waiting for them to come home, you know?
Yep. I mean, you got to get successful. You know, it's always like that. It's like you get successful and then dad like comes around and is like, oh, now he wants a part of your success, and you just like said, yes.
Well, you know, talking about success, you know what wasn't a success that happened this past week, weekend, whatever?
Something you don't like, Camille, I'm taking a guess. Is it League of Legends?
No. I make fun of Overwatch week in, week out, but I do not like the game. I have a fair amount of hours in it, but Overwatch 2, I mean, we theorized about what it was going to be in the last podcast, and I think we were all pretty spot on that it was just going to be some random patch that they're hyping up, and it's not actually going to be that great. And what do you know? It's gonna be an expansion on top of the game, and it's just going to be a few changes here and here, there. But, you know, Overwatch 2 prophecy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was announced. Let's give it props. It was announced in a really spiffy mechanic. Right. About how you have to fight, like, a bunch of robots. And, you know, then you, like, win. Like, it's what, like, now a co-op game? It's almost like this little thing, you know. There was a game that came out in 2012 that had a mode called Man versus Machine. Actually, the game came out in 2007, and then a couple of years later, a mode came out called Man vs. Machine, which was a PvE mode. You know what that game's called, Camille?
Is it the, you know, that game that sort of maybe inspired the Overwatch game, you know?
Yeah. It's Team Fortress 2. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Now, I think, all right, so I'm just going to, I know it's not, literally not esports here, because the mode that came out is just fucking PvE garbage, yeah. Right? But like, I think for the direction of Overwatch as a title, I think it's pretty cool, you know, expanding the Overwatch world that is nice and interesting and stuff. But as an esport, it's like your game's still going to be shite. The patches are going to take 10 years to come out.
Well, they're going to take longer now if you think about it, because why would you patch the competitive side if the PvE side is bigger?
I mean, Blizzard say they got the NBA of esports in their grasp.
Well, Blizzard say a lot of things, bro. Blizzard also say that they've had their best year on record, and then they're like getting rid of 800 or something employees. So,
yeah, I mean, maybe it's the best year because they don't have to pay 800 more employees. You know?
That's right. You don't trust like megacorps like that when they tell you certain things.
You know, for sure. I think we had this argument last week. It's like, Leonard's like, you know, League of Legends posed the best numbers ever in the history, which I completely probably agree with in a certain context. But like, who's letting us know on those numbers, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if it's not an independent, and like, you always have to take numbers with a bit of salt. It's always like, you know, it's always like, oh, the Chinese numbers, oh, they had 200 million viewers. Definitely didn't have 200 million viewers. Definitely didn't, because that is like 1/6 of their entire population. I highly doubt there's that many people that watch games in their country.
But you know, enough of Overwatch 2. Let's talk about a real esport, and I can't believe I've called this game a real esport. But we've got League of Legends semifinals took place this last weekend. Prof, I even watched the G2 versus SKT game. That's how hyped that shit was.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Faker. He's going up against what many people believe to be the best team in the world. Faker's never not made a final. G2's like aiming for their first final. They are the bad guys in esports. You know, everybody sort of loves Faker, even if you kind of hate him. He's still like, you know, the last remnant of, you know, like the truly old school League of Legends from Korea. So everybody sort of like wanted both of them to succeed just to see what would happen. And surprisingly, G2 3-1 SKT. All games were very, very close. I think it's a 3-1 that looks a little bit deceptive, because in at least the first and final games, SKT did look like they'd actually gotten out to a big lead, and then just G2 didn't crack, played very, very well under pressure, you know, controlled the map correctly, took the fights that they needed to. And I mean, especially in that game one, they just dodged a lot of those big fights that SKT was trying to get. SKT was never able to get it until right at the end, and when they finally took the fight, G2 had just outscaled them. So, you know, mad props to the bad guys from Europe, but what can you say? They fully deserved that victory. SKT just didn't look like the team that many thought they were.
For sure, and I don't know, like, I also want to get on the back on SKT bandwagon, but, like, obviously I don't know LoL too much. I'm not an expert on it, just a casual tuning in, but wow, I really enjoyed the games, and the way G2 was taking the fights, it was like a lot of points in games. It was like, I think it was game 3, I believe, where SKT, they were taking out the Elder Dragons, they were taking on the Baron Ashwars, and it's like, okay, they did it. They're in a good position now. The gold is a bit ahead. They just slayed the dragon. They should win this fight, and G2 just outplayed them, and I mean, game 3 perks performance, 9-0, prof. That was, I mean, the memes, like, even the Chinese community is going crazy about how well this guy played.
Yeah, I mean, Perks, I think he's certainly been in contention for their best player, Caps, the mid laner. Again, I'm very much a casual. I just probably watch it a little bit more than you. But look, Caps is, you know, he's got the nickname of he's either Craps or he's Claps. Like, he either plays well or he's like very, very bad. I mean, he was good in the series overall. But yeah, Perks, I think he and the jungler are probably the, like, odds on for the best players in G2. Although, you know, saying that, G2 is a very, very good team all round. So, as good as Perks played, I think the rest of his team fitted very, very well around it, which, it must be said, wasn't the case for the SKT. There was multiple people that said Faker just looked massively disconnected from his team, just didn't look like the same player of old, wasn't a leader, was more like a, you know, just sort of a plus one.
Yeah, which is real sad. You know, we could have sworn that Michael Jordan-esque reputation for Faker, where he's just straight up unbeatable. I mean, I think he's still considered the GOAT. That will never change. Oh, unless something drastic happens in the LoL world down the line. But it just wasn't that, you know what, he's going to do it, man. He looked a bit disconnected from his team there in the end in the games. And just no standout performances from him, which is just sad in a semifinals kind of game.
Yeah, very, very sad. And I mean, it's the first time he's been to Worlds and not made the finals. So, you know, I mean, that should just give you some indication of how ridiculous this guy's career has been, that he's been to 5 Worlds and he's not made the final in one of them. That's it. You know, the other times he's either won or lost in the final. And when he loses in the final, he was still, like, ultra hard carrying his team just to get to the final. So, I mean, a truly ridiculous player. And I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because a lot of people were saying that, like, you know, this almost feels like a changing of the guard for Korea, and it has been for the last 2 years. In that, like, Korea, like, the I mean, especially the two teams the other two teams that came this year, Griffin and Damwon Gaming, they had a lot of the youngsters coming in. And it's really going to be interesting to see how those guys end up performing later on down the line, because they looked good. I mean, Griffin obviously spanked G2 pretty hectically towards the end of group. So certainly, you know, Griffin is a team to look out for the future. If they can sort out their choking issues in Korea itself, I think they'll be okay. But yeah, it's a bit of a changing of the guard. Last year we had a Chinese team and a Chinese team and a European team in
the finals.
Yeah, in the final, Chinese team wins. This year, we've got a Chinese team and a European team in the finals. Although I do think G2 will be coming in as big favorites. FunPlus, Phoenix have looked okay, but, like, they haven't looked, like, you know, rampantly dominant, which is it's certainly going to be an interesting one, because despite, you know, me saying, oh, they haven't looked that great, they're still in the final, which you can't take away from them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people criticized the FunPlus Phoenix at the start of the tournament, where they dropped, like, some random-ass shite match in groups. But at the same time, it's like, groups, they still came out on top of their group. They 3-1 Fnatic. They 3-1 IG, last year's world champions. So they are coming in to finals with a decent bit of form as well. And they were the number one seed in China, which, again, were the reigning world champions. So, again, it's a similar storyline. Like you say, we've got China in the finals versus EU in the finals. And, you know, for Dota, we had for about 6 years the East-West sort of tradition going on. Maybe League of Legends is going to see a similar suit now at the moment.
Well, I mean, nobody from the West has won anything in League, or has won the World Championship in League of Legends since Season 1. So they got a long way to go.
From what season are we at now in the world? Is it?
We are Season 9.
Oh, okay. So from holy in 9 years, not one Western team won that.
Yeah, you want to hear the worst part? So season one is won by Fnatic. Season two by a team from Taiwan called Taipei Assassins. Season three, China. Season four, season three, Korea. Season four, Korea. Season five, Korea. Season six, Korea. Season seven, Korea. Season eight, China. Season nine, to be decided. So yeah,
to be decided. Okay, actually, that makes sense, because I remember last year when Fnatic made the finals, there was all the talk around, oh, we have an EU team there, is this going to be it? There's a non-Korean, they're
playing in the finals. 3-0 in the finals.
They got reamed. So at least for this finals, whichever way it goes, I think it could probably go 3-1 again, you know? Hopefully we see the full best of five series, but the trend of the tournament has literally been in playoffs, just 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, 3-1. Like, it's actually, the bookies must be going crazy, man.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen it, as you say, we haven't seen a game five, so it's certainly got a lot to live up to. And, I mean, these look like two teams that could go. G2, you know, they look extremely potent, but they have been blown out in some odd losses, especially to Griffin and FunPlus Phoenix. I think they have the potential to beat them, but we'll have to see. Obviously, G2's got a lot more hype going in than FunPlus Phoenix, but you don't get to the finals of a tournament like this by just being an okay team.
Yeah, for sure. So for all those who are curious, this next episode will come out on Thursday. On Sunday of this week, you will see the finals. FunPlus Phoenix versus G2. You see, even in my head, I still got SKT, man. Feels bad. Feels bad. But that's it for League of Legends. We can go talk about games that we actually care about. No, I'm kidding. Talk about another Blizzard game. This is actually a really cool thing.
So, oh, I mean, it's another first, I think.
It is indeed. So, and another first in the esports world is we have Xiaoming Li, champion of the Hearthstone's grand final at BlizzCon, the first ever female to win the Hearthstone Grand Championships, and the first ever Chinese player to do it. It's a phenomenal feat in the esports world, Prof.
Yeah, it is massively so. Obviously, Hearthstone has had a number of world champions, and she becomes the first female. Also one of the first females to win, you know, just an all-round world championship in any sort of esport. There have been others, but Xiaoming Li, massive props to her. She goes all the way, knocks out her opponent in the finals 3-0. Brian Bloodyface Season just 3-0'd him straight up, takes home $200,000. Not too shabby, I'd say. Camille, not too shabby at all.
Not too shabby at all, and it's real cool to see, man, because even in South African esports, there's been a long time debate going around sort of females and their position in the esports world, right? Some say, oh, they don't have the technical skills to do it in a game like CSGO. Some say, oh, girls are not bothered in gaming. Some say, you know, girls are exactly the same and they should be doing it in esports. I mean, we can get into Extreme Thread a little later on, but Xiaoming Li doing it in it's not a technical esport in a game like CSGO, but it's a CCG, right? It's a really big title. It's Hearthstone. I mean, even in just the TCG genre, we have the Magics, we have the Yu-Gi-Ohs, the Pokemons. These games are massive around the world and really top-tier stuff. And I think, I don't know, thinking about Magic tournaments and stuff I've been to, I haven't seen too much of, like females there and competing, because I don't know how much that appeals to them. But, like, from the Blizzard side of things, I know from, like, just Overwatch and stuff, the amount of clientele they have through the female player base. And I think it's like one of those cases where it's just genuine, right? You're just coming in. It's not like some, okay, this is the female league. It's not some, oh, this is a girl, we should hype her up. Because I even though I support those things, I don't think they're necessary, because again, put them in an even playing field and you get a world champion. Nobody in the entire world can dispute this shit, right?
No, there's no like, oh, but she had an easier route, and oh, but this, and oh, but they're like, no. She beat who got put in front of her, and she 3-0'd the finals. So there's no more debate. She did it the hard way, and, you know, massive, massive props to her. And, you know, and we'll get around to the discussion in you know, separate female esports. But I think it just goes to show that, you know, if somebody like VK Leon can do it, why can't others?
Yeah, for sure.
There's nothing stopping her from achieving it. So I think it just goes to show that esports is very much a more even playing field. Yeah, maybe there are some scientific studies that say X, Y, and Z about why certain people win and others don't. But we haven't seen those studies in full yet. So VK Leon showing the correct way to do things.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there has been that argument. I mean, even Miss Harvey came on. I think it was either Richard Lewis podcast or Thorin's podcast. I can't remember which one I watched. And she was saying that she thinks that these sort of ultra technical sort of quick reaction games like CSGO and stuff are not really games designed for women. So she thinks they have a natural disadvantage or whatever. And I think a game like Hearthstone is more, it's a card game, it's a strategy game, it's more of the mind, right?
More cerebral, so they, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't even think that's a caveat because that's how the game's designed. But that question has come up. But like you say, I'm completely in agreement that it's, we don't actually know yet. In 20 years' time, we could see studies, we could see this, we could see that. But for now, we have no fucking idea, right? It's just, it's a free fall. Even in male esports, we still don't know what's the most optimal things. Like, if you just see how sports has progressed in the last 20 years, the difference between Sampras and Roger Federer, the way they train, the way they sleep, the way they eat, it's massive. I mean, we got a long way to go still in esports. But like you said, man, Zhao Mengli, trailblazing.
Trailblazer indeed, and very, very well played to her. And congratulations. I think that's all I can say to her. Congratulations.
Yeah, 100%. I'm like completely what you think. I'm a new fan here, man. New fan.
So now I won't go that far. I'd still have to watch the Hearthstone, and I'm not gonna do that. So.
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, I watched my first ever rugby game this weekend, watching Springboks win the World Cup, which is great. I watched my first ever League of Legends game. Okay, no, that's a lie. My first ever League of Legends Worlds game. So who knows? Maybe I could jump down into the pits and watch Hearthstone.
Yeah, certainly. Give it a try and let's see what happens.
I don't know what Deb gonna do. We called Hearthstone an esport in our episode of our podcast. I think he's just gonna die, dude.
Die of happiness, hopefully.
We hope so. We love you, Deb. So the conversation about females in esports has taken off in the local scene as well. Xtreme's made wasn't Xtreme's thread, but it was a thread that kind of went viral in terms of in South African esports terms, right? There was like a girl tweeted, Bon, Caleb, I think is her.
Yeah, Caleb.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Oh, but that was her response. But the first tweet that started this was by Bonnie. She made existential girl gamer crisis. When you really want to play CS competitively again, however, there's only like 4/5 female teams that are full, and I find I'll have to retire and become a professional solitaire player depressed. And then somebody responded there, my reading today is so messed up. I mean, let me put on my reading voice. Well, I mean, there hasn't been an FE tournament in forever, and I doubt there will be another one. I feel that FE tournaments were a way to help the female scene, quote-unquote, break into the scene, if that makes sense. So what's the point of joining an FA team if there's no tournaments happening? And then another, Caleb AQ, who played in an FE team, and hosted the tournaments for the female leagues as well, said, female teams need to try and move away from female-only tournaments, though it's a nice idea and all, but I think most FE teams need to stop being scared of non-FE tournaments. That's my opinion. The problem is half the teams are too scared. So that is what the female side of the scene says so far, Prof.
One of the voices in the female scene.
Yeah, one of the voices.
I mean, I don't think she's that far off the mark. We have seen that a lot of the girls don't like to play in the open tournaments, largely because they do tend to be more competitive, and yes, guys will be nastier to you. There's a lot of shit talk going on. Girls don't really get as much involved in that kind of thing, and certainly, you know, it happens to guys as well. Do you really want to get involved in a game where you know you're going to get slammed because you're playing a much better team? Now, it seems as though guys tend to have more of a competitive drive than ladies do. I think that does affect them, is that they're not as like ultra driven to, they have to win at any cost, whereas a lot of guys are like that. And again, it's a spectrum. I'm not saying that guys are always like that. I'm saying guys tend to be more competitive than girls do, and that's why they tend to be more active in those kind of scenes. Girls will play, but they don't want to be part of that scene very often. And it must be said, guys do also force them out. Like, you can find very, very good girls players that'll never get onto a guy's team just because the guys have this inbuilt thing that girls are worse players, regardless of whether it's true or not.
Yeah, obviously there's the general stigma. I think we've had many conversations about the female leagues in general, but I think use Zhao Mengli, VK Leon, or Lion as an example. I think you have to look at games where people, like play naturally, right? Where females play naturally. I feel like CSGO is not a game where you find too many people, too many females playing it. I don't know whether it's just like the design of the game or it's just like, the fact of the matter is your majority of your player base in South Africa, which has a massive CSGO player base, is going to probably be 95% male. Maybe, yeah. Maybe I don't have stats to back up my numbers, but I think if I look at the competitive side of it, if you look at a game like Overwatch, where I think the game was made to appeal to a larger audience instead of just the male audience,
yeah.
You have, like, if you go to the Overwatch, if you go look at photos from the Overwatch a VS Gaming Championship, there's an abundance of females playing in teams there. And it's not a case of, oh, wow, this is a girl playing there. It's just a natural thing because girls play Overwatch. Naturally, if enough of them play, they're going to be good at it, right? I don't know. Again, we don't know the things. If you're going to go to the pro level, this, that, whatever. But for South Africa, is far from that. To play at a VGSC, you just need to be good enough. And there's no way girls aren't good enough because, again, we saw it there. I mean, locally in South Africa, in League of Legends, you also see there's a lot of girls that play the game because it just appeals to that audience. The design is cooler. It's, like, very anime-like. And even just in League of Legends on the esports side as well, we had Scarlett, who, again, in 2018 Masters was playing in the finals of the VGSCs, one of the top 80 carries in South Africa, who, I mean, obviously former host on the podcast as well, but in games where these girls are naturally playing, it happens. There was no need for female leagues, this, that. I'm not saying those things weren't necessary, but
by
the lack of belief, right? They definitely help, but we need to make that transition now as well.
You see, the problem is, like, the female-only leagues go both ways, is that They encourage girls to participate, which is what you want. But then at the same time, they create a little bubble. And it's much like the South African esports bubble as a whole, is that
right.
We play in our little bubble and you become the best in your little bubble. And as soon as you leave the bubble to go overseas, what happens? You meet the big bad wolf who just wrecks you. Now,
right.
We've seen that multiple times with our CS teams, with our Overwatch team. Most recently, with our Dota teams,
FIFA
all that kind
players.
Of thing. Yeah, it's the nature of the beast. Now, where the other games can say, oh, but it's ping that we can't play on even terms with the guys because of ping. So when we go overseas, we play guys that have been able to scrim properly, etc., etc. And that's what comes back to bite us, is that in the female leagues, is because you're playing against lower level opposition, you don't get that level of you don't have to learn all the tricks to beat the player, because you can get somebody where you just outskill them naturally. And because there's fewer players, there's fewer good players as well. And it's just, the smaller your scene is, the less likely you are to pull out a great player. And that's just the problem, is that because the female scenes are smaller, they have a smaller pool of talent to work with, which means they're less likely to have a fantastically skilled player. And because they sit in their own leagues, or they have historically sat in their own leagues, they haven't made use of the open opportunities for various reasons. Guys discourage them from playing because they'll be nasty to them. They won't pick them up for teams, even though the girls might, clearly be skilled enough to play on the teams. And at the end of the day, if you're best in one scene and you can make money out of that, why do you want to go get involved in another scene where you're going to be bottom of the pile to start with? It's just, do you really want to grind your way to the top with an avalanche of abuse sometimes hurled at you? Just that doesn't seem worth it.
No, for sure. And I like the way you're looking at it from the sense of just like an objective lens, like taking a step further back. I mean, the female scene for CSGO, or just female esports scene, has the same problems that South African scene has as a whole, right? You're just a small, isolated scene. But I think the female leagues have already done such a good job of like destigmatizing the gaming for females. If you look at how much influx there was from season one of the Valkyrie Challenge to season two, I mean, that was proof of it alone. But now, obviously, it's a case of, I think, for the girls, and I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do or that kind of stuff, because that's like not about that. It's just like, y'all still have a responsibility, man. Fucking trailblaze that shit, yeah. You can still do it now. Keep up the work. Maybe it's not CSGO. Maybe CSGO, the spotlight was there. But in any game, if you're a female doing your thing, like, you're already trailblazing. This is what Zhao Ming Li said. Here's a quote. I mean, Chris, Chris at DyaZA on Extreme Thread was like so passionate about this. And I think, again, it's like a good example of like how the public, in terms of the Twitter sphere, is now trying to show support for the thing, where I think he's coming from a place of not, ugh, why is there female scenes, or ugh, why are girls trying to play games? It's like, why aren't you guys doing this more? He wants to see it happen more. And again, as guys, we're not trying to tell people what to do and shit. It's just like, the opportunities is there. It's like, it's not unattainable. It's not, I mean, you have to be honest, like, just do it, man. Just do it. Yeah. And I think it will start happening again. I think the CSGO scene is suffering from a case of where it wasn't necessarily organic, the growth, seeing as there was like a set space created to create that. But the confidence could come again. This is what Zhao Ming Li had to say after she won. She says, I want to say for all the girls out there who have a dream for esports competition, for glory, if you want to do it and you believe in yourself, you should just forget about your gender and just go for it, man. Because the fact of the matter is, right now, there is no proof that girls or guys are better at video games. There is, yes, we get that. There's a fucking...
Yeah, there's proof that more guys play, ergo more guys are better.
Exactly, and that just works. That's for everything except New Zealand and the All Blacks. Like, just they're a small island and they only play rugby, so maybe per person in per capita they have the most rugby players, so maybe that the stat works there too. But fact of the matter is, there's more guys that play than girls that play, so you're obviously gonna have better players there. But work at it. We can get more girls to play, and I don't wanna like discredit the fucking the toxicity side of the whole esports industry, but shit everywhere, and you guys can do it. Yeah, you can do it. Yeah, esports is not a serious thing. It's not your job on the line. It's not your this. It's not. It's just like. I want to see it grow, man. I want to see it grow. Yeah, I don't know if we came up with preachy in this
It's
episode,
basically
but...
it's like at the end of the day, it's like we want more players to play, regardless of whether they
For sure.
Pink, blue, red, green with pink spots. Doesn't matter. We just want more people playing esports in general, and girls are a big part of that. So let's see more girls playing. It would be lovely because as soon as you become the first in South Africa to win anything, you are getting like epic amounts of praise from everybody if you become the first girl to win a massive event that's open for guys and girls.
He's just putting the incentive there now, Prof. You're like, ha, if you win, even though you won on the event and this one had three events or whatever, you just do it and you're the first one to do it, you get a chip on your shoulder forever. And I back that shit. I mean it's a good example. Shaz, right? She went out, she went overseas, she did it. She won a massive tournament, and like she's kind of like immortal in the scene now, right?
No, I mean Shaz is the best example. I mean, Shaz's big events came in girls only scenes, yet she can hang with the guys. So she's the perfect example of if you're good enough, you can play on any team. It's just like I said, there is some prejudice. I'm not going to deny that there is some prejudice to guys not wanting girls on their team sometimes, but. It's one of the things that everybody's going to basically have to, put their big pants on and get over it one day.
Yeah. Enjoying this segment on the discussion around females in esports, I just want to put again, like a shout out to, the League of Legends scene, the Overwatch scene. I don't think we really spoke about this stuff so much. Like, obviously, there wasn't as much social media and stuff going around that girls are playing. It was just natural. And I think that's the way it should be. I don't think it should be a case of we need to speak about this stuff. But because we see it so rarely, it's like, shit, there was a girl playing at the fucking VGCSC tournament. Gotta make a tweet about this. They gotta talk about it on the podcast. But we want that shit to be the norm at some point.
Yeah.
And
it should be the norm. We will get there one day. It's just, it's a long, hard slog. And, CS has always been a bit more of a jocks game, it must be said, in terms of like the esports scene. So it might be why it's just naturally more against the girls. You do also just have fewer girls playing a war game. So. There aren't little cute characters that you can run around with and
stereotyping there, Prof. I'm kidding.
But I mean, like, you're not going to have girls playing as much in without those kind of things. So
no,
CS
sure.
has natural disadvantages, and I mean, League of Legends and Overwatch has found a way to get it to work, and we can only hope that CS will one day see the same.
Yay! Or it'll just die because Valve don't care about it. Who knows? Smiley face.
Yeah, that'll probably happen soon.
I mean, I saw the most savage joke ever. I think it was Thoron who said this. He's like, there's probably some guy there in Valve actually just waiting for the day that CSGO dies so he can go play Dota 2 as well. And I was like, damn. Yo, that shit was savage.
It does feel like that way sometimes, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, You want to add anything else to international esports news, or you're ready to hit? Well, I mean, we're already kind of local. We're talking about local.
I think the easiest way to transition to local would be to just bring up the Overwatch World Cup, of course, which took place on the weekend. Because, I mean, we announced that Overwatch 2 came out, but there was the small matter of the World Championship going on the whole of last week at BlizzCon. We obviously had, you know, holding thumbs for the Rhinos to do well, the South African team that had gone over. It must be said, I think expectations were met. We got knocked out in the first round by Singapore. It is a very difficult situation, and it must be said, Overwatch World Cup has one of the dumbest formats I've ever seen. Because what happened to the Rhinos is they landed in America. They had a couple of days at most to, you know, get prepped and all the rest. Then you play a single game, best of four. And if you lose, you're out. Cheers. Thanks very much for coming. You can go home now.
I mean,
I was just sitting there. I was like, why is this a thing? I'm very confused. Why do they play a single game and then get knocked out?
No, for sure. I'm completely with you there. I don't want to dive in too deep on the Overwatch World Cup stuff. Regards to Zay Reynolds, I want to do a nice big segment of it. Hopefully next week's podcast, if all things come together, then we will have that nice segment. But I do think you're 100% on the mark for where you're at now, Prophecy. I definitely agree with those sentiments. And I got a lot of sentiments myself on this.
Yeah, well. Like, the thing is, it's just, like, I mean, we'll obviously talk more about the Overwatch World Cup or the Rhinos, it must be said, in depth next week. So, for anybody that didn't know, the Overwatch World Cup took place. The Americans finally won. Let's just put that out there. So America's looking pretty good at esports in the last couple of months because they've got two world number ones in CSGO. Those guys are contending at the moment for world number one for the end of the year. US has won the Overwatch World Cup. More shockingly, they beat Korea on the way to the final, and then they beat China in the final. So mad props to the boys from the US because they finally, scraped a tiny bit of that mountain of shame. They're like chipped off the top. Because despite having by far the most money in the world, their teams are finally starting to win. And I mean, they did, like I said, they did it the hard way. You don't beat Korea in Overwatch easily. And they beat them pretty handily. I think it was 3-1. I think it was 3-1 in the final. China, I didn't see the final score there, but I know they knocked over China. So, you know, you can only give the US mad props because they've done fantastically well thus far. And despite my complaints about a crappy format, they beat it. They did it. They knocked out, you know, the big seeds on the way out. So they very, very well played to the US there. But I still hate this format. I think the format is absolute garbage for, like, finding out the best teams in the groups because it just... Well, I mean, why fly halfway across the world to play one, maybe two best of fours and then go home?
It is
so stupid.
Painstakingly horrible, but I just gotta say, you know, I've had a reputation as a sort of esports conspiracy theorist on this podcast before, and I gotta add to it again. You're telling me a USA team in Overwatch of all fucking games beat China and Korea and won a tournament? I don't believe it. That's some Blizzard rigging right there, dude. No ways.
Well, I mean, it must be said that Korea didn't have their best players available to them. There was a couple of guys that would have certainly made the Korean team that didn't play this year. I don't know the reasons why, but I do know that wasn't like the best Korean team you could have made. So the US beat got put in front of them, and you can say no more.
Yeah. I mean, this team still has a couple of good players, but the USA did it, man. I'm not going to conspiracy theory too much just in case, you know, get sued or some shit for my memes. But yeah, they did it. And they did China and Korea. That shit's insane. I mean, the Blizzard, the Korea team still had like Carpe there. Okay, I don't know the rest of the players. I just know Carpe from like original
Overwatch
finals.
At the very least, they were missing like Birdring, Prophet, Fury. There's a couple of other guys from the New York Excelsior that they're missing. So like, it's not like the whole team is bad. But there are upgrades that would have been available to them had they gotten those players, and they didn't. So that's mostly what I'm saying there.
I mean, Overwatch World Cup is more or less irrelevant in the greater scheme of things. But I think it is a sort of changing of the guard. You know, the Korean, I mean, before the Korean dominance was to a certain extent, it's like Korea is the first best team, Korea is the second best team, Korea is the third best team. The Korea is supposed to be the fourth best team, but they choke, so now they're just not relevant. You know, it's like that was the case before in esports, you know, historically with the StarCraft, the League of Legends, the Overwatches. Maybe we're seeing a change of guard. Maybe the West is starting to finally catch the hell up, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that certainly does seem to be the case. Korea, obviously, just the nature of their culture and the way they'd set things up from the early days in the early 2000s meant that they've just had this crazy head start on everybody. And, I mean, even when teams have looked like they could match them, Korea's just had the advantages. So Korea's going to, if this continues, Korea's going to need to start doing a bit of soul-searching in the next few years to figure out how to get back to that all-conquering best that they have.
I mean, in a grand scheme of things, this is a good thing. I know we're going a bit off topic here, but we all love to talk about Korean esports and it's the greatest thing of all time and they win everything and stuff. But what's behind that is like slave labor level work ethic. It's like 14-hour work days, 7 days a week, the burnout, the depression for the players. Like, it's not a healthy system at all.
But it produces the best results.
It does. It does. I mean,
it's a horrible thing to say, but like they've made it work.
It's not worth the pain, dude. Gladiator Arena would still be entertaining and exciting to go to, but it's not ethical, Bob. I'm just saying. I mean, I'd pay money for my ticket there, but like there'd be protests outside. are you not entertained, ladies and gentlemen? All right, so. Done with the East, done with the West. Let's go to the South. And the first thing we have to talk about today is Smash Ball. Okay, it's actually FIFA. Rocket Mama's Smash Ball series. It was a FIFA tournament or a series of tournaments hosted by ACGL at certain Rocket Mama stores. There was the Cape Town qualifiers and then there was the Joburg qualifiers. So the people who qualified so far from the Gauteng side of the world was Pirates Unfazed, Momzy, Shuebo 7, Zadie, Yazir 11, I don't know how to say this guy's name, man. And Sucks, yeah. Karabo, Ibrahim, Voroshin, and Abu Akil. So a lot of Orlando Pirates names there, and it's going to be a grand final on the 7th of December in Cape Town. Now, before we talk about the grand finals and all that kind of stuff, this tournament, I was following it from day one. If anybody watched my Twitter, I was retweeting and stuff, and it's such a cool idea. It's just like various areas at different Rocket Mamas. I think your entry covered like a burger and a chips for like, it was like 80 or 100 bucks or something. It's like, I've been to Rocket Mamas. Just your food alone there costs more. So the fact that you can get into a FIFA tournament and shit with that is a really good deal, actually.
Yeah, it's a great way to market your event as well. Because Rocket Mamas is, you know, it's a little bit of a different type of burger place. It's, you know, a little bit more upmarket than a McDonald's or something, and it's good to see them getting involved. It's, you know, it's not one of these massive ostentatious events where they're giving away millions and millions of rands. It's
which nobody should be doing anymore. Yeah, by the way,
it's a much smaller one. They have multiple events that you can go to, so you know you cover a bigger group. And FIFA is obviously just a thing that's always going to attract millions of players. So I think it's an absolutely fabulous initiative. I'm not going to watch FIFA just because I think watching FIFA is silly, but certainly playing it is absolutely awesome.
Dude, I'm Indian. FIFA is in my bones, dude. I enjoy watching FIFA. Like, it's super fun, especially like.
I'd rather watch like Messi and Ronaldo and the rest of the boys do that in real life than watch it.
I would also, there's no debating that, but like if you're in a rush, you're raging, there's a FIFA competition going on, you go to that shit, man. That shit is hype, man. The players have their own style, the level of competition, like the competitiveness in FIFA is something else in terms of like, I don't know, dude. It's a magic, dude. I've enjoyed every single FIFA event I've attended in South Africa, and yeah, I'm surprised. I wonder if there's a reason why there's not a lot of other, sort of the other big names in the FIFA today. See, not there, like the Goliath guys, for example, the Bravado guys. Maybe it's just they played a different set of qualifiers I'm not aware of, and they're going to be attending those. But for now, mostly Pirates dominating the Rocket Ball series so far, or Smash Ball series. And it's, again, another perk to the event itself. It's a non-endemic brand sponsoring esports now as well, so that's really cool.
Yeah, that's exactly what you want, non-endemics coming in, because there's a ton more non-endemics than there are endemics. You know, there's only so many mouse sponsors or headset sponsors or controller sponsors going around, but there's just an infinite number of big companies that aren't part of esports or tech that can get involved.
Yeah, and I think with the Rocamamas, for example, I think it's a good pair because it's something that it's mutually beneficial. It's not like something random, right? If you're having, you're getting a whole bunch of clientele there into the store, like obviously there's the deal, you're making the burgers and the chips for the people entering, but then in this case, if somebody wants a milkshake, you can buy.
Yeah.
If let's say there's like four Bravado guys in the finals and they end up winning the tournament and stuff, Andreas wants to celebrate with his team and he buys them a whole bunch of drinks and stuff. Like, there's so many ways to sell it. Yeah. Like, it's just a good combination, man. And
I mean, Rocamamas is also targeted at a younger demographic
for
as
sure.
Well.
For sure.
So, yeah, it's just, I think it's just a good pairing all around.
Yeah. That's for sure. So shout out to ACGL, shout out to Rocco Mamas for sponsoring some good old ZA FIFA. Good shit. Now next
more,
one.
Please.
Now while we're on the console hype, Fortnite, Metal State's going back to the endemic brands as well. We had Metal State host a Fortnite. What is this thing even called? But they had a Fortnite tournament. My thing is loading. There we go. There's the link. It's gonna load eventually. All right, it's up. It's called the Metal State Arena Solos Fortnite Competition. Very complicated name, or not a complicated name. It just took long to read. And there was 156 players that signed up for this thing, Prof. And it was, I mean, if you see any Fortnite competition in South Africa, you know how hype it is. I mean, like, there was a practice tournament that Elite Pro Series hosted this last weekend. Hosted 84 players for a practice tournament. You know, these kids are willing. These kids got talent. These kids are enjoying. And these kids tweet about their shit, most importantly. I don't know why I'm calling them kids. You know, it's Fortnite. I just assume they're 14.
It's Fortnite. It's pretty much going to describe why you're calling them kids. But, I mean, either way, these youngsters are doing pretty damn well. I mean, just to see the number of players that we have here is pretty crazy. 156, that's wild to see those kind of numbers getting involved. But, you know, that's the kind of appeal that Fortnite has. Yeah, we joke about it that it's 12-year-olds playing it. But, I mean, it's got a much bigger player base than a couple of the other games that we think are big in SA. So, you know, mad props to these kids, to these youngsters. They're playing pretty damn well. There's still 1 week left to go. It ends on the 6th of November, I think it is.
No, they announced the winner on their Twitter. I don't know if they got the dates right on their site.
It's because on the site it looks like it ends on the 11th of November and there's a fourth week here. But either way, I mean, R2,500 to the winner. So congratulations to whoever does win that. And again, it's just good to see that we've got lots of these events going on. There's a lot of entries because every time there's a new player that's entering and we're retaining all the others, the whole scene grows and it gives more incentive for others to get involved.
That's for sure. You know, we do actually have the top 8 here. Mr. Neymar, he won it. Unlike the football Neymar, this guy actually wins something. Neymar from Bravado. Top the leaderboard at 87 points. Riots followed second with 84 points. Trogons, 78 points. Giddy, 69 points. I don't think this guy's name is Energy Fortnite, but that's what he got it listed, so I'm going to go with that. 68 points at 5th plate for Energy Fortnite. 6 for Psycho at 66. And 7, Dog Archer, again, 60. Oh, no, he was 66. My bad. And then 8th place. What is this guy's name? Storm Test. Rocky, just 8th place. This guy doesn't even get a name because it's too difficult. Just 65.
Storm Test Ross, dude. What are you talking about?
It's so weird, name, dude. Storm Test Ross.
Okay. Not if you can read, Camille. Your mom's going to have a talking to you.
All right, dude. We already saw with the tweet earlier that my reading is a bit... it was actually my reading aloud that was shaky. My head reading, it went fine. And I put on the reading voice, it worked, though. It worked. Storm Testros. See, if I do it in the reading voice, I can do it, man. Yeah. I can do it. I've got to whip out the reading voice.
Just work in the reading voice all the time. And keep that filthy, normal Camille voice away. That thing scares the grannies away.
Oh, man. It was so bad. Last week after the podcast recording, I was like, hey, guys, did you see? I didn't swear at all this episode. And they're like, what the hell is this kid talking about? You swore like 20 times in 5 minutes. I was like, what are you guys talking about in prophecy? He's like, bro, just shut up. And I was like, okay, man, okay. I get you.
We're trying to go for something cleaner. I mean, it's hard when Camille's around, but we are trying
to go for something cleaner. It's hard with Abby, yeah. So, yeah, we're hitting the end of the show now, but we do have one segment left before we top things off. This is our new segment. It's called the Community Questions segment, and our first question was by our editor of our publication. Do we even want to take his podcast? We don't like that guy. It's just mutually beneficial for both of us to be here, you know. That's just the situation. No, I'm kidding. So our first question was by Sargon Zade. It was, If you were personally in a team that qualified for event, not in your home city, would you travel to attend, even if it were highly likely your team would be eliminated in the very first series slash match? Why or why not? So I'm going to answer this quickly, Prof, and then I'll let you go. And yeah, I'll say a hard no. I think if you have a tournament structure, especially in South African esports, where it's one match in, one match out, unless it's the only exception I can think of was the VS Gaming 1.5 million rand FIFA tournament, because you had insane amount of players that you had to do it in that way. But even there was that sort of a back route we could get into the thing. I think just one match as a format is hot garbage. It should never exist in esports, especially locally. Where are you at on that, Prof?
Yeah, I mean, you don't just want to play like literally one game. I mean, obviously you can contend that like maybe just playing for one whole day is also kind of crap, but you know, those kind of events were often just more about like you go down then it's about the whole scene as a whole. Like you get to know a whole bunch of the players and you can practice and pick up tips and all the rest, and you can watch the rest of the games. But yeah, I do think a single game is far too little. I'm much happier to see, you know, any kind of group. So it doesn't matter what format you run, just more than one game. So if you want to do round robin, great. If you want to do Swiss, also great. If you want to do I can't remember what the hell it's called now. There's a GSL format. You know, that'll also work. It's just I think you want to encourage players to come up and you want to fill the first day at least with as many games for the players as possible to make it worth their while. Because you don't just want to rock up there, get wrecked by like a top tier team and then go out. You want to at least give teams like an idea of where they stand in the world rather than, oh, you've drawn Goliath Gaming in round one and you're going home in 20 minutes time, you know, and it's a 5-hour trip there and back. So
yeah, 100%. That's fair. I think it's a pretty clear cut thing, unless you Blizzard, who for some reason think it's a good idea to make teams pay to show up at their tournament and then go out in like 5 minutes. It's not a good idea. Not even for Blizzard, but I guess they Blizzard, right? They can do what they want.
They got money.
They got the Zuck. So now we had a question on the Facebook, Facebook page. We know we had one this week as well. I'll get to last week's question. So it was, when will we see Clash Royale tournaments in Africa by a guy named Praneshan Moodley? And I mean, the Esports Central publication responded that ACGL hosts weekly online Clash Royale tournaments for Sub-Saharan Africa. We also saw at, was it Comic-Con this year or last year? I'm not sure. This year I was in Cape Town, so I didn't get to see it. But last year it was.
Yeah, I think it was last year, to be honest.
Yeah, last year we had a Red Bull-sponsored event of a Clash Royale. I think it was the international qualifier where you could go play a Clash Royale tournament in Germany if you won the tournament. So there's a lot of hype going around there. I think if you want to know more about that, I mean, I'll be real with you, myself and Prof, we don't know too much about that game. So pop ACGL a message. They're doing this stuff weekly. They very involved in the scene. They'll be very happy to help you out.
Yeah, especially for the smaller games. If you aren't certain whether those games have tournaments, first off, check ACGL, and then secondly, you can check Metal State. Those are the two that'll be running the most broad options that you'll have in gaming in SA. So check those two out first before you go and look at, you know, like the really top tier events, because the top tier events will tend towards only going with the big ticket items.
Yeah, that's for sure. So our last week's question on the Facebook page, we missed this, I'll be honest, because I had to get my granddad's details to log into Facebook. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I just missed the thing on Facebook last week. But now we'll get back to it. It was Henry Boyson, I think.
Boyson.
Yeah. There's a double over there. Why are esports in RS in Republic of South Africa so badly marketed? Why are we struggling to get funding for more competitions, to get more competitions going? That was a weirdly phrased question. In my opinion, Prof, I think we're very lucky to have what we have now. I think marketing can be a bit poor sometimes, but we see it getting better with the likes of Metal State, even VS Gaming, the way they've done their Instagram marketing for certain events. They've even hired a marketing person, even though it's not perfect yet. It's getting better. I think ACGL do a good job of doing stuff for the events. I mean, even for that Mortal Kombat tournament, they had shameless self-promotion. They even got a peep to come through and do video content and stuff for them afterwards. There was, I think marketing in esports is not perfect, but I think people are already making a big effort to use what we have and broadcast it out to the world. So I think it's getting better there. Why are we not getting funding for more competitions, mate, we already lucky to have what we get. I mean, we're getting, I mean, at Metal State's Rage tournament, the ROG championship or whatever it was called, it's a 150,000 rand tournament. That's massive, right?
Yeah, in comparison to the number of players that we have.
I mean, let's look at viewership. Huge. It was like 550, right? 550 for the weekend, which is great for SA numbers. But realistically speaking, that's like less than like tier 2 EU Dota or something, like just online games. So, I mean, we're lucky to have what we got right now. I think we need to work on growing the shit, and then we can worry about, like, why aren't we getting more funding? Because we've got plenty. I mean, the likes of VS Gaming supporting the scene for the last 10 years, the likes of Metal State coming in, doing what they're doing, the likes of ACGL. We are very fortunate in this very small scene we got. That's my opinion, boss. Yeah.
I mean, just from my part, I think why SA, esports and SA are so badly marketed, at the end of the day, it's the same as everything else, budget. Do you want a top-tier event to be run well? Do you want to have as many teams as possible? Do you want the teams to be able to get there? And then marketing is one of the last considerations. You know, it's whenever an economy goes down, one of the first things that businesses cut back on is marketing, because it's easy to get rid of. And it marketing tends to be massively expensive. And that's just the thing. So, yeah, the reason why it seems badly marketed is just because funding, the various orgs can only do so much. You know, they'll boost posts on Twitter and boost posts on Facebook, but you're not going to see it in the newspapers. You're not going to see it on television, just because that is outrageously expensive. And that's unfortunately the issue there. And then why are we struggling to get funding? Same as Camille said, we should be happy with what we've got right now, given what we can give to sponsors, because we don't have many players in relative terms. We have very, very few. We have not many spectators at the moment. We're trying to grow that. So the fact that sponsors are willing to give us what they are willing are willing to give us what they already do is massive. And we're struggling to keep the sponsors, I think would be a better way of saying it, is that we always have people coming in. But when we unfortunately can't deliver is when those sponsors go away, and then you have to sort of wait a couple of years down the line for them to want to try it again. And that's just the problem. So we just genuinely need to grow the scene. It's why we always say, just, you know, be that evangelical for esports. Tell everybody about it. Try, you know, get your cousins, get your friends into it, tell your mom about it, that type of thing. Because the more people that are willing to watch, the more sponsors will be willing to get on board, and the more money eventually flows into the competitions as a whole.
For sure, for sure. And I will add one caveat to the marketing thing. I don't think we market badly, but I don't think we're nearly as creative as we should be in terms of the kind of content we use to market. I think ECL is a good example of this. So the eCheck Champions League hosted recently, where they did that whole Extremes hat thing. There was like doing partnerships with EVTech, where they were giving away like backpacks and stuff. There was so much. There was a lot of creative. Like, it looks like memes. It looks like fun, but that shit, that's marketing, and that was good marketing. It wasn't just that
costs money. That's the problem at the end.
It does. No, it does. But it's a very creative way to market as well, because I think esports people are quite we want everything for free. We want it now, and it must, like, we don't want to see ads and shit. People just moan about everything in esports. So you have to be quite savvy with your audience as well. I think that was one of the cases where
I will say that, like, if you look at overseas, like, for what we know that they have to work with, esports orgs generally do tend to push the absolute limit on what they can get out of marketing budgets.
Yeah.
And certainly, I'm not saying that South Africa's, you know, that everything can be excused with just a lack of budget, but a lot of what goes on in SA is budget, although I do think that we can do more. We can certainly do better marketing with what we've got and what we can afford. It's just really about using it smartly. And I think while we're getting a lot out of it, I think we can still get more.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think the best example of creative marketing, to give just one example here, is that I go look at ESL One Hamburg, the Dota tournament that went on last week. Go look at that video that Slacks and them made with the whole secret shop thing. I mean, that is creative marketing. Yeah. I think that's what we need more of.
The problem is, it also comes, you know, it's not all just about the tournaments. Like, the teams, need to have better marketing. Like, if you want to see one of the best guys at marketing their teams, go look at G2. G2 has actively, especially in League of Legends, they've gone out and actively cultivated an image of being the bad guy. And people love them for it because that makes them unique. They don't play by everybody else's rules where they have to be nice. They are going to be a bit of, you know, a bit more of a jackass type thing. And that's a form of marketing as well. It's marketing your own teams. And South Africa at the moment, again, it's, you know, it's difficult. You got to find video producers and video editors and all these kind of guys. But the thing at the end of the day is we need to get more out of what we already are. Like at the moment, I'd say we're probably getting about, let's say 80% out of the what we've got to spend. We need to get it up to that 100%. And then you'll see, because when those teams get bigger, they get bigger sponsors. And when bigger sponsors get involved for the teams, they get involved with the TOs as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's a whole holistic thing. And if you want to, like, again, like what you're saying there, for the community side of things, like how much do we do as casters, as players, as community members to talk about the things that we... Like, we have to make a community effort to grow this thing at the moment. It's not like nobody's going to give it to you. And the sad thing is it has been given to us for so long that we've become this ungrateful bunch of just...
We just expect more and more every year, but it's like there's nothing that we're giving back in return.
Yeah, for sure. So I think this is a topic on the marketing and stuff we can hop on for all day. But let's take our final question of the evening from Dora and Dai, Sinister Five's star player, you know. Made it to the Masters Finals this year, won Masters last year for the Dota team. You know, man's on a mission. He asked, is the league format VS Gaming uses, such as playing 2 months of seeding matches for one weekend LAN, efficient or unnecessary, compared to us to say a 2 week seeding schedule and a 1 weekend LAN? Now, I don't know if you remember, Mr. Dennis, but myself, Bob Yules, and Sneer made an hour-long podcast talking about how VS Gaming is killing the Dota scene with a nine-month LAN. League. It was, we made the point that it's unnecessary, it's this, it's that, or whatever. But if you look at it, the South African Dota scene would not like it. There's nothing else that goes on. Absolutely nothing, yeah,
it's,
right?
It's the only game in town is that nine-month league, so...
Yeah. So, I'm completely with you that the way they do it is the most inefficient way possible. I think the leagues till today still feel largely unnecessary. They feel largely unimportant. They just feel inconsequential to the most part. You have 4 legs spanning through like what feels throughout the year. I mean, there's no, like, it feels like they're not important. Even VS Gaming doesn't really feel they're too important. I mean, they did a good job this year of adding prize money and stuff, so giving teams an incentive to play for. But I mean, there's still no broadcasting or anything going about the games. Forget even a tweet or anything like that. So
The problem is those games have little to no bearing on the events as a whole. You know, it's like, oh, what is the first leg of VS mean? What do you get
Nothing.
Out of it?
Nothing.
Like, that's just the problem, is that I can certainly see why they want to have leagues. Is because, like, they want constant, you know, you always want people to be involved. If you only appear for 2-3 months of the year, people are not going to care, and that's the problem. So you do have to sort of like keep people hooked in, and unfortunately they've done it, and I think they've done it in the most efficient way for them, which is to just have a 9-month league. But it doesn't necessarily mean
it's not 9 months
grows.
Anymore, at least. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Like the problem is the long form league format, which is the real issue here, and you can see it in just about any major sport is what they do. You know, it's like if you look at the NBA, it's 74 games a season. And then they only play playoffs right at the end. If you look at the baseball, that's like 114 games a season. So, like, the unfortunate part is that, like, a lot of these things are based on sports models, which is all that they had to work on back in the day. But I do think things are changing, and certainly VS this year has shown the motivation to change. So they certainly look like they're changing a couple of things. So while I agree current and old formats are crap that you have to play for so long for just about no reward except a spot at the LAN for 1 weekend, I don't like that. I do think that they were trying to change things up. I'd much prefer at the end of every leg there's a tournament, but also that's going to mean splitting of the prize at the end of the year. So damned if you do, damned if you do, don't. They need to make as much as they can. At the end of the day.
For sure. I completely with you. Then I actually want to touch on to that point about like VS Gaming changes and stuff this year. I think not spoken about a lot But this year, I think VS Gaming have done a really stellar job with the whole esports, the ecosystem. I think they've run a lot of stellar events this year. I think they've marketed them a lot better than they usually go. It looks like players have really enjoyed the events and such as well. I think it was a big shift moving away from that giant sort of DGC mentality. And I think it was a big risk. And this year they had the Magic Center and they made it work. So shout out to them. But I think the whole concept of like franchise league, I mean, it's a common thing in sports, right? You have the Barclays Premier League, you have the NBA. It's like, it's a system created that you have consistent content all the time. Like
For TV deals, basically, is
exactly,
why it's done.
For TV deals, for sponsors, for this, for that. There's so many ways to monetize with franchise league. Now, with VS Gaming, why, if it was an international company doing this, I would think it's the dumbest fucking thing ever, where it's like, you have this long-form international league, so you have this endless stream of content, but you do nothing with it, right? So from a business point of view, it's really stupid what they do. But I think from a player's point of view, I actually don't think it's that horrible because there's nothing else to play for. So they're giving you a platform to compete. And yeah. I think you have seen the likes of Metal State try host, especially in the Dota community, try host tournaments and this and that.
Yeah, and there's zero purchase, especially
zero,
in Dota.
Yeah, and the community is not happy with those kind of tournaments. Metal State are not happy with the tournament. It just feels like a large failure when anybody that's not VS Gaming try get involved and do things for the tournament. Now, this is not all the community's fault. I mean, I think Metal State also don't know really how to tap into the Dota market that well. But I think what VS Gaming do, I think let's forget even a game like Dota. Look at a game like Overwatch or League. Like, they're literally the only people doing tournaments for that. So if you get 6 months to play for that, I think it's, 6 months where people can play. It's not a great situation. It's not even an okay situation, but it's a situation we needed. It's a situation we got.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the only way you could make those leagues better would be to, you split it up, that at the end of every leg you have even if it's an online tournament, I think it'll have, but the problem is that comes out of the pot at the end of the day, and everybody wants to talk about the 500,000 rand that they win at the end of the year. They don't want to talk about the 10 or 20 that they win in January or February, because that's not fun. You know, if that takes out of the pot at the finals, people don't like hearing that.
I mean, here's an idea, and God forbid anybody fucking touch Dota 2 in 2019 in South Africa, but, I mean, this is a simple format that works in Dota International, and it's worked in Dota locally as well. You have one weekend where you have a qualifier, have like a Swiss format thing, super hype, all the teams playing, make sure you get your games broadcasted, have your advertising, have your everything, your socials and stuff ready, and we saw this with one of the Mega 8 tournaments, I think the 2017 tournament, not the one where there was a hoax tournament where they never fucking did anything in the end, but the one the year before where they had the panel with Donnie and Snee. I can't remember what that one was called, but they had exactly that format. They had one weekend where it was qualifiers, super hype. We got to see everybody play. There was so much socials and stuff going on. There was a vibe for that weekend, and then the next weekend or the weekend after, you had the main event. It wasn't a LAN tournament, but it was a professional production, and the event happened. Again, the socials and stuff were great. We saw team interviews and stuff, and I think it was a bit over the top in terms of, again, what kind of monetization did they get from all that high level production? Maybe not that much, but the concept itself was great. One weekend qualifier, one weekend cup. I think we live in age of millennials. We don't have long attention spans and shit. Short and sweet. You don't have to have 500,000 for that shit. 2,500 rand for 2 weekends or 1 weekend worth of time seems like a good deal to me, prof.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do. But, you know, that can sometimes require more effort, not more effort, more admin. So,
I mean, I actually took this idea to a tournament organizer. I spoke to them and I was like, yo, maybe we should do this kind of thing. It's like Dota season, nothing's going on right now. It's a low cost thing. You can even just get casters to cast from home or whatever for a low price and shit. Like, it's just a situation that works for everybody. It's a cheap event for you guys. It's something to play for the teams. Broadcast goes out, so I can be it doesn't have to be me casting, but somebody could go there and like cast the things. It's like hype going on, but and then it's the quit. Then it's like you just look at SA Dota and it's like, oh, this racism thing here, that racism thing there, like just the general thing that nobody tweets about the game. It's like, what's the incentive to do it? It's like, if that tournament organizer has to come back to me now, and they were keen on it, mind you, but it's like after we see all the things that happen, me and him are both not going to bring it up because it's like, why? It's just an uncomfortable situation for both of us.
The thing is, that is like that is Dota. So I think rather than talking about just Dota, we do have to acknowledge that like it's going to be the same problem across every esport. Is if you're running eight of those events in a single weekend, it becomes very, very difficult to run eight separate tournaments all at once. And it's just sometimes easier to run a league that sort of, you know, sorts itself out.
Yeah, I just spoke about the cup thing in regards to Dota Rise because there I feel fairly confident I know it'll work because I've seen it in the past. I know the community. I know what they're like. But for other esports, I can't say what it'll work because, I mean, I think Metal State also ran into a similar thing in terms of their philosophy where it's that they had a formula that worked really, really well for CSGO. I mean, they were considered the premier provider there for a long time. The community was happy. They were happy. They had the professional production, this kind of stuff. But like translating it to other esports, I don't know if they feel like it was the success that they hoped for, you know? So for different esports, you need to know the communities and do it slightly differently, I think, for each of them.
Yeah, the problem is that that's a lot of work.
And it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work.
Yeah, and you need staff for that, so it's a bit of an issue.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. We're all, you know, hustling out here. That's just esports. So that's it for our community questions, and I think that is it for the podcast, Mr. Prophecy. Any last words on anything in the podcast, or even out of the podcast? You can even talk about the NBA if you want.
Nah, I mean, I'll just say that it's now 67 episodes of No Chris House on the show. So I'll just keep announcing that every single week until he does finally make an appearance.
I've completely given up. I was hoping like episode 100, maybe we get Sargon to join, but the likelihood is not high. Don't count your chickens, boys. Don't count your chickens. But yeah, that's the show. That's Esports Central Podcast episode number 67. You can catch us on Twitter from the host side of things at kchickday, at g_kay, at stgutterlily, and of course at Prophecy Gaming. And don't forget the publication Esports Central ZA on Facebook, Twitter at esportscentrl, and on the World Wide Web at esportscentral.co.za. Thank you all for tuning in, and goodbye.
Cheers.